Blog Talk Radio.
With SRN News. That's 347-989-0132. And if you're trying to listen to us on 1490, the transmitter is down, but we're streaming through the 1490 internet connection, and we're also streaming through Blog Talk Radio, and you can find us at itsyourgavel.com.
All right. So anyway, please call in 347-989-0132.
All right, and the topic today is, this is very controversial, and I want to give a little backdrop, because the Middle East is in turmoil right now, as everyone knows. Maybe the worst turmoil in modern history.
At least since World War II.
Yeah, since World War II. Maybe since the end of World War II, because, you know, we had the Nazis advancing on Cairo and across North Africa.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Rommel was trying to destabilize Egypt by sending agents provocateurs from Libya through the desert.
That was a lot of turmoil back then as well.
Yeah, and really, the Middle East has been in various degrees of turmoil in modern history since the fall of the Ottoman Empire, so we could actually date this back prior to World War One.
Or maybe when Rome injected itself about 2,000 years ago, it's been in turmoil.
Yeah, it's...
Maybe back 3,000 years when Moses said, "Here's the Promised Land."
Well, yeah, we could talk about this in a number of fronts, but we have to keep the global commons open. The global commons are all those sea routes that run around and through the Middle East and into the Mediterranean Sea.
The Suez Canal.
Yes, and all the other gulfs and seaways that lead to the Suez Canal from the Indian Ocean and the Arabian Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz, the Gulf of Aqaba.
Even the Panama Canal, right?
It's not a... Trade flows from South Asia westward around India and through the Suez Canal. And, you know, anyone who's ever taken work at Central Command knows the importance of keeping the global commons open.
What Terry's referring to, and she's worked within the military, one of the major missions of the U.S. Navy...
Of the United States of America, of our military.
Right, of our military, and most of that burden probably falls on our Navy and maybe the Air Force.
The Central Command, yes.
Central Command is making sure all these trade routes are free-flowing.
And it's not just trade for oil. It's trade for all kinds of commodities.
Yeah, Hondas.
Yeah, you know, imagine what can flow through the Suez Canal.
iPhones.
Yes, so at any rate, you know, destabilization can prevent that from happening, and of course, Israel is not part of Central Command. It's actually part of European Command, even though it's attached to the Middle East.
It's pretty close to Europe.
Yes, and so...
You could walk from Europe to Israel.
Yes, you could. And so Israel is a very important partner in this objective that most of the world shares in keeping those sea routes open and free for business.
Right. So, like, if Egypt decided to close the Suez Canal... They would quickly realize that they just lost sovereignty of the Suez Canal.
Well, we have Al-Qaeda all over the Sinai Peninsula.
Yeah, it's
which is right next door to the Suez Canal. It's just to the east. So we have political instability in Egypt, along with terrorism as part of that political instability.
I think a lot of people are familiar, because we can go on and on, but I do want to get to the topic. And it is important, you know, Hezbollah, which is an arm of the Iranians and like a cousin of Hamas.
Yeah, they have cells all over the world.
In Israel, but Hezbollah is basically based out of Lebanon and is a strong ally of Assad, who's the president of Syria, who's trying to hold on to his position. He's lost a lot of control of Syrian territory. But Hezbollah has decided in recent weeks to start to fire rockets into Israel, and Israel's retaliating.
And those rockets have Iranian defense manufacturers' marks on them, by the way.
Yeah.
That's nothing new.
So the Israeli-Lebanese border is heating up, and Hezbollah is in political control of Lebanon. And, you know, I could do a whole show just on the history of Lebanon, but we'll just leave it at that. And actually, right now, Israel's on the brink going to war with Hezbollah or Lebanon, depending on which way you want to look at it, by moving ground troops in there and cleaning up Hezbollah out of southern Lebanon, which they have done a number of times. And personally, if Israel thinks they need to do that, you know, I think they need to do that. But that's just part of the backdrop of what's going on in the Middle East, besides ISIS, you know, and then beheading one Japanese and then beheading another Japanese and then burning a Jordanian pilot, which apparently was burned several weeks ago, while they're negotiating a trade for that same pilot who's already dead for a couple prisoners of Al-Qaeda that's being held by the Jordanians. And when they released that we killed the pilot, the Jordanians and the king.
Well, but Jordan is one of the West and the United States' closest and most reliable of allies in that part of the world.
And is in friendly terms with Israel.
Yes, and here's a case where you have a fighter pilot who is of a particular tribal stock, major tribe in Jordan, and a willingness of tribes from that fighter pilot's family and probably related tribes that his family is married into, willing to fight, likely being mobilized to fight in the same manner that we saw the tribes of Iraq mobilized to fight Al-Qaeda, which later turned into Islamic State in Iraq and during the first wave of the insurgency. So it's very, very intriguing to me. This to me is a lesson to governments of the world on how you can mobilize people in Muslim countries to fight this scourge that is threatening the state of Israel and all other states, even Islamic civilization itself, and the existence and the survival of that religion as a viable religion for the future. So that's what the stakes are for Muslims and non-Muslims, and this is a lesson that there are people in the Middle East who are willing to fight, and millions of them, too, if you think about the size of some of these tribal confederations. So the next few weeks are going to be very interesting to see what comes out of Jordan. I think Jordan's air war may very well turn into the start of some kind of ground war, perhaps training tribal people to fight alongside special forces, Jordanian special forces perhaps other Western special forces. And in the meantime,
they may be pulling in and leading some Iraqi troops.
Quite possibly. The
Iraqi troops may not have the proper command structure or leadership to lead men without retreating into battle.
The tribes do, and actually the Abu Risha, the current Abu Risha of the Dulain tribe in western and northwestern Iraq, did appeal to President Obama last week for support. And he said to President Obama, "You pledged to support us when we met during your first term in office, and we are really suffering right now at the hands of this thing called Islamic State. So I suspect we're going to see more assistance for the tribes of Iraq that's going to have to come from U.S. forces because that's what was in that area. We know that the tribal, the Dulaim and those other tribal areas much better than other multinational forces that were in Iraq simply because of the location and where we had our own forward operating bases. And we know who all the players are. It's just a matter of reconnecting with them and giving them some confidence and giving them some heavy arms back, which was what we had done during the first wave of the insurgency. We had given these tribal fighters heavy arms. In other words, not AKs, because they all have AKs, but heavier weaponry like 50 cals. And then during the drawdown, they were required to give some of that back, but they were integrated into the police force. A lot of these tribal leaders were actually
Are they getting support now?
Some, but not enough.
Not enough.
And
the Kurds. How about the Kurds?
The Kurds are getting great support. And
they need our support, you know.
Yes. And some of their support has always come from Israel. The Kurds are a very Israel-friendly society. This isn't to say that the other people in Iraq are not friendly with Israel. There are moderate sheikhs of al-sheikhs in Iraq, Shia Arabs, a Shia Arab sheikhs of al-sheikhs in some of those areas who are responsible for particular communities in Iraq that are also Israel-friendly. They are out there. So things are much more nuanced in the Middle East than we really, really understand. So what's going on with this speech?
All right. Well, now it's important to have this backdrop laid out before we just lay the speech on. Because if you listen to the American right wing with entertainment propaganda industry, they focus in on the speech, and there's all this stuff going on. And I want to add one thing to this, because there's the Palestinian propaganda machine is pushing really hard in this country to create an illusion that, you know, if we just, their path to peace is, why don't we just bring all the 7 million Jews that are in Israel now and let them come to the United States and let them come to Europe. Like if you gave them a ticket, they would come, you know.
They're leaving Europe.
A lot of them are leaving Europe to go to Israel. But you can't get free tickets to the Israelis and find a significant number coming to the United States. It's not going to happen. But they want to create this illusion like, hey, if Israel wasn't there, the Arab world would be calm and collective and unified and friendly to the West, and all would be good. And it's an illusion, because whether Israel is there or not, this fighting that's been going on between these tribes, that didn't start in the last 10 years or even after World War II or World War I. This has been going on since Muhammad passed away and left his two brothers to fight over who's the heir of Islam.
Well, that's part of the conflict, but that's not the only part of the conflict.
No, that's only part.
That's the classic Shia Sunni rift about who really is the rightful heir. But the other part of this conflict is that periodically throughout Islamic history, you have groups with visions very much like al-Qaeda's or Islamic State's visions who rise up, and they are, and when that happens, they threaten Sunnis, they threaten Shia, and they also threaten some of the other more minor Islamic sects that are really neither Sunni nor Shia, and they have a vision. It's very ideologically pure. They believe that they're practicing the way of Muhammad, and they are very selective in their interpretations of the sayings of Muhammad. Sometimes they select sayings from the Muhammad, which is that that have been proven as forgeries.
Right, but there's a lot of clashes going on.
There are two aspects of this, and it's important to keep that in mind. You could settle the Sunni-Shia rift, but you would still have al-Qaeda and you would still have Islamic State to deal with.
Right. And whether Jews were in Israel or Palestine is irrelevant to all this going on. So I just want to point that out. Now, Israel has its own political system, its own internal politics, and Netanyahu, which on many levels I have a lot of admiration for, and on some levels I disagree with him. He wouldn't be my first choice of prime minister, but I'm not a citizen of Israel, so I don't vote in their elections. They voted him in. And actually, I probably have a little more, I'm a little more comfortable with Netanyahu than I am with the Republican leadership in this country. I need to point that out. However, with that all said, it's pretty clear that Netanyahu has aligned itself in his party with the Republican Party in this country, which I think is a dangerous thing to do. And the Republican Party in our country has embraced Netanyahu and his party. So both these parties want to keep each other in power. And they're willing to place political stunts now in March. The end of March, there's an Israeli election coming up. So 2 weeks before that election, Netanyahu's come into Congress to give a speech. Now, part of the backdrop that's going on is, you know, with this fight with ISA, the United States finds itself, who really, Obama has said, we don't like Assad in Syria, but in some levels, we were almost an ally of Assad in Syria against ISA. And we have the Iranians, which, believe it or not, because we figure Iran is a radical Islam, but it's a whole different sect than ISA and this Islamic State, that the Iranians don't like this. So we find ourselves in alliance with Iran. And right now, the Obama administration is negotiating with Iran, and you've got some of the opposition parties in Iran because they have a political system, and they have, you know, they have their version of Democrats and Republicans and this viewpoint and that viewpoint.
It's not a full authoritarian government. It's not fully authoritarian.
There is some democracy in place.
Yeah, they have elections. They're what we would call in political science a partial democracy.
Right. So you got some of the opposition to some of the leadership that right now is negotiating with Obama, making statements that we should not compromise on our nuclear program with the United States. And then if you turn on Fox News, you hear that, like, you see the Iranians, no matter what they negotiate, it's not going to happen. Well, you know, it's like any minority party or a particular congressman or senator standing up going, well, I disagree with the president, while he's putting forces somewhere or making major moves, it's not going to stop. One voice or several voices is not going to change the policy of the United States. It's the same thing in Iran. But if you want to be Fox News and select what facts of reality you pull out of really a big situation and you grab minor variables and elevate them to look like the major force within Iran, you're creating a gross distortion. So with that all said, you got Netanyahu who wants to get reelected, and he wants to do some political posturing. You want the Republicans that will basically almost throw the security of the United States under the bus to discredit Obama. And they figure, well, the pathway to the White House in 2016 is to continue to discredit Obama and the Democrats and our heir to whoever becomes the nominee for the Democratic Party.
U.S. American Christian organizations that donate money to Israeli elections for religious reasons?
There are. Actually, you know, Jews give tens of millions, maybe a couple hundred million dollars a year to Israel.
Of course. And perhaps to Netanyahu's.
The Christian community in this country gives more. There's a lot more Christians in the United States. I'm pretty sure I'm correct in that.
They have theological reasons for.
They have all kinds of reasons. We could dive into that, but we won't.
But essentially, this is a two-way thing. Netanyahu is here campaigning.
He's campaigning.
Campaigning here to get reelected there.
And he's also posturing 2 weeks before the election. Look, I'm in front of Congress. Now, how did Netanyahu end up speaking to Congress? Because if you watch Fox News or Rush Limbaugh or listen to some of these right-wing shows, Obama refuses to speak to Netanyahu. Obama's snubbing Netanyahu's speech while he's here, and he went to Saudi Arabia, and he's in the Middle East. He didn't visit Israel.
He went to a funeral in Saudi Arabia, too, by the way.
It was a funeral, You know, and he could have gone to the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, and he didn't do that. And, you know, you can look at all these historical anniversaries across the world that have significances and go and just every day read what historical anniversaries did Obama snub today.
Well, U.S. presidents, if they went to every historical anniversary, they would not be spending much time being U.S. presidents. They would just be reduced to figureheads who go traveling all around the world.
Right. Exactly.
But
Even if you set the vice president, he can't be at seven places at once either.
We had
significant representation from the U.S. government at that anniversary.
Yeah. And he needed to be at King Abdullah's state funeral. And I know it's off topic, but I'd like to address that because there's been a lot of criticism that President Obama went to Saudi Arabia and didn't shake his finger at the Saudi monarchy for its human rights problems, but yet when it had been in India days earlier, that's what he did. And you know, I've not heard this anywhere, but I was watching all this discourse, all this brouhaha over what Obama didn't do or did do or didn't do regarding making human rights speeches, but I just don't regard a funeral as an appropriate place to shake your finger at somebody and lecture them about human rights. I think that's a topic for another meeting, not at a funeral.
Yeah, exactly. There's, you know, people use the term, boy, that was a very diplomatic answer, right?
Yeah.
Well, why do we call it a diplomatic answer? Because diplomats, they're wordsmiths when they speak, and they have to be. And right now, Saudi Arabia is an ally, and I know some people in this country, you know, they figure Islam is a religion of hate, and all Muslims are evil, and all Muslims are against the United States, and that's not true. And if you listen to the beginning of the show, Terry was talking about, you know, these tribes and these groups are allied and friends with the United States, and it's you can't just paint these broad pictures and draw conclusions. But you know, if you're Fox News, you want to be an uninformed news junkie of Fox News.
Right.
You're just misinformed and wrong. And what's happened here is the leadership of the Republican Party has done something that they've never done before. They went ahead and invited a head of state of another country to come speak to the Congress. Now, we've had other heads of state speak to Congress before, so there's nothing wrong with that, but they never did it without going through the White House and coordinating with who's ever the president at that time, coordinating this and the State Department to make sure all protocols are in place and everything's done correctly. No, they went ahead, and all of a sudden, there's an invitation and an acceptance publicly announced all at once. So it was kept quiet. It was kept quiet from the White House, and suddenly there's an invitation, and Netanyahu has accepted the invitation, and it's all released all at once. So all of a sudden, we're going there, and at the same time, Obama's snubbing Netanyahu. And all of a sudden, the administration has to respond to, is Netanyahu going to come to the White House during this talk? So they're putting the president intentionally and deliberately in a position where they can criticize him. And you got the drumbeat of redstate.com. You can go to that website. That's all the talking points of the Republican Party. You know, I'm sure the Koch brothers and Karl Rove have previewed this whole strategy if they hadn't created it themselves, to create this controversy, which is overwhelming everything else that's going on in the Middle East. And we just pointed out, that's why I said we need to create a backdrop of some of the issues going on in the Middle East, because the biggest issue in the Middle East is not President Obama snubbing Netanyahu. Matter of fact, it's making it very difficult. And while the president and the State Department and John Kerry is negotiating with the Iranians for a peaceful solution to the denuclearization of Iran, we have, just like you know, some of the Iranian people in Iran are making statements, we won't compromise with the United States. We have the Republican Party here going, well, and President or Prime Minister Netanyahu, with all respect to President or Prime Minister Netanyahu, he should be standing up there from Israel's perspective, saying, you got to watch the Iranians and the nuclear weapons.
Well, that's his job.
That's his job, and he should. As Prime Minister of Israel, he should be pointing that out. Now, it's different saying that and going to the United Nations and saying it. That's okay. I think if he didn't do that, he'd be failing his role.
Of course.
If he didn't go to the United Nations and state this. And if he didn't say it to the Europeans. And if he didn't say it to the American people. To watch out, but to interject and make a presentation to our legislative body, I think it's a joint session of Congress.
Well, we're right now in the process of really high-level diplomatic negotiations with the Republic of Iran, and it would be a mistake on our part to engage in some kind of course of action that would cause the collapse of those negotiations, precisely because we know that the Republic of Iran has nuclear capability and is in a very precarious situation right now internally. And we've seen what has happened in other parts of that part of the world right now where governments have become destabilized and have collapsed completely. And that's the last thing we need right now with the Republic of Iran, especially and precisely because it does have nuclear capability. If you don't think that Islamic State or Al-Qaeda has an interest in the Republic of Iran simply because one is Sunni and the other one is not, forget it. And right now, Israel and Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Turkey are among, and Kurdistan, if you want to call it Kurdistan, are the most stable places in that core part of the Islamic world. And like it or not, we need them. And we just cannot engage in courses of action that cause the breakdown of diplomatic negotiations. So now we're seeing these tensions that are being reduced to, you know, Republican versus Democratic politics. And I'm just really offended by the politicization of this aspect world politics and political stability, because I went to Iraq twice. I was hired to be a civilian to work with the army in what was at that time one of the most dangerous places in the world and is still one of the most dangerous places in the world. I've been shot at numerous times. I know I've had colleagues who were kidnapped. I've had colleagues who were you know, doused with fire and lit up and killed. I've had colleagues who were killed in suicide blasts, deliberately targeted. I mean, this was the kind of environment that I was working in, and so it's really offensive to me for anyone to reduce this down to politics. We're dealing with people's lives. We're dealing with people's lives and the fates of whole societies, human beings. So it's time for everybody to just get over it and get on with finding where the common ground is and talking about these things in a way that's aimed at bringing everyone, all stakeholders, Sunni, Shia, tribal, whatever, together to fight a common enemy.
And Iran, in their common enemy against the Islamic State, it turns out to be actually on our side of the fence right now, which is ironic. It's ironic.
That's
and
a pun.
Ironic, yeah.
Trade the A for an O,
yeah.
Anyway.
No pun intended.
Ironic. Okay, sorry.
Ironic. It's ironic. But it is. And the leadership of Iran probably finds themselves looking at the United States going, maybe we need to shift a bit and work with the United States, and maybe they're willing to moderate their own internal policies. And while that's being said, most of the Iranian people really want some major reforms within Iran.
Yeah, they do.
They do, and they're one of the best educated Middle Eastern countries outside of Israel. They have the largest middle class of any Islamic state there is.
And they're just highly educated, therefore.
And most of the people look at the United States and go, well, why can't we be like them? And under the Shah, which you know, people can criticize the Shah, but they took them from a desert community coming out of World War II and brought them into the modern world, and they want to be part of the modern world. And the Iranian leadership knows this. Now, they have their extreme conservative, and from their perspective, conservative, who want to stay radical. They have to deal with those people. Like, we have to deal with this radical element within the Tea Party. And I'm not talking about your local Tea Party groups within our own communities here, because it's what's going on.
I kind of like those people here locally. They've been on the forefront of unearthing all kinds of corruption in the school board and in Manatee County government.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to give credit where credit is due.
Well, locally, there's those that are manipulating the Tea Party from above, like the Koch brothers, and then there's the grassroots who hear this, and if you can sit down with them and talk to them and give them another perspective, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
They just need to be shown a different way outside of the Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck's of our country. And here you have the Republican Party going, boy, we can make Obama look really bad. And Netanyahu is like, hey, I can make my countrymen look at me. I'm going to stand up to the United States. I'm going to stand up to Obama. But in many ways, if you read the Israeli press, it's starting to backfire for Netanyahu now within his country. So, and now Netanyahu's got himself in a pickle. Does he move forward and go ahead with the speech, or does he back out? And if he backs out now, does it mean he's lost strength, or does he do the right thing? He's in a precarious position he's put himself in, and you can blame Boehner and Mitchell for putting them, for inviting Netanyahu into this trap. And there's really big issues going on here. It's not like, hey, you know, we got the Koch brothers and they're giving $1 billion, and we got the Fox News propaganda machine, and we got Clear Channels, you know, the strength of Clear Channel controlling the radio waves. We can pretty much let people think what they want. This is like if you watch the movie Wag the Dog. And if you remember that movie at the end of the Clinton years, which made fun, and, you know, let's paint a picture like there's a war going on in the world, and the United States has got to get involved in that war. But there really isn't a war. We'll just create the media attention as if there is. That's exactly what they're doing on a daily basis. And the realities of really what's going on in the world are complex. They're delicate. And they can dictate for generations the outcome of what this world's going to look like. Terry.
The world is going to be in a condition of conflict, especially in the core areas of the Islamic world, for a long time to come. And a more mature, nuanced manner of examining this problem is truly in order. there is a difference between Islam as it is practiced in societies around the world and this other thing that we call Islamism. One is a monotheistic faith, the youngest monotheistic faith in the world, and the other is a political ideology that rose up in the world in the middle of the 20th century, right around the same time that Stalinism and Nazism arose, interestingly enough. And so you have a political ideology backed by some of these terrorist movements that is responding to modernity and to the modernization of their societies and their religions. And what you have in the world is, some of this can be attributed to the breakup of the Soviet Union, because many of these states in the Islamic world were aligned with the Soviet Union.
But were under their dominance.
Yes.
They were never happy being there.
Yes, and they became over-secularized, and people need faith. You know, I don't care how over-secularized your society becomes, people need faith. And in the absence of other more moderate channels for the practice of faith, you're going to see radicalization. There have been some really good books charting this kind of progress with the advent of political Islam after the fall of the Soviet Union. And, you know, this is all part of the backdrop of what we are experiencing today in the world. But again, fundamentally, for the United States, for the West, this isn't just about oil. It's about keeping those trade routes open, not just trade for oil, but trade for a lot of things that we depend on. Yes.
A lot of food goes, you know, the world.
Textiles. I mean, just you know, name a commodity. Name a commodity.
If those trade routes collapsed, a lot of people would starve.
If those trade routes collapsed, this world, this entire world, would be plunged into an economic depression that would be far greater than anything the world knew in the 1930s.
So the U.S. military wouldn't let the Suez Canal blockade exist?
No.
If the Egyptians, which they have sovereignty on the Suez Canal, and they're maintaining the Suez Canal to international standards, right, that the international community appreciates. So it's under their guardianship, and they're acting responsible with it. But if they suddenly said, oh, we're closing the Suez Canal, how long would it be? And they could probably do that for a few hours. How long would it take before we went ahead and forcibly opened up the Suez Canal?
It would happen pretty swiftly, within several days.
Within days, if not hours. And I'm sure that's one. The Pentagon is known. This is no secret. They have plenty of contingency plans.
Oh, yeah.
So if there's a scenario out there, it isn't like, well, we better go figure out a response. They've already had the experts looking at this and coming up.
We war game and make plans and contingency plans and more contingency plans.
That's
routinely.
And the Suez Canal would be opened. The Straits of Hormuz would be open if the Iranians try to block that. If the Panama Canal, if the state of Panama said, oh, we're going to close the canal, which is inconceivable to think they would do that, they would lose their sovereignty over the canals. Egypt would lose their, would at least temporarily lose its sovereignty. They would, and I can't picture the current Egyptian government doing that, but I could see Al-Qaeda or ISIL going there and attacking the Suez Canal and trying to get control of it. You know, and that's, you know, that dam that they controlled, ISIL controlled up in, was that Syria or in Iraq? It's near Kurdistan.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's up in the Mosul area.
How long did they control that dam? For a few weeks?
Not long. We had to take that back. Are you talking about the control of the Haditha Dam in the first wave of the insurgency, or the one more recently?
More recently.
Yeah.
That didn't last long. And if there was any intelligence showing that they were about to blow the dam, it would have been even more swift. And that dam is a minor thing compared to some of these trade routes. Meanwhile, we have the Republicans running around going, do you know Obama is snubbing Netanyahu? He's snubbing him. You know, and they're the ones who created the situation. They kind of shoved the situation down the White House's throat. They did this. They broke all protocol for 200 and some odd years of this country. Can you imagine if the Democrats try to do this under a Republican administration?
Well, wouldn't benefit the state of Israel if our negotiations and our discussions with the Republic of Iran right now just broke down completely and stopped? That would be a regression in diplomatic events, and not a progression. And Israel is among the many states that would not benefit from that. And I have Benjamin Netanyahu is not an idiot. I'm sure he understands that.
Here's the speech that Netanyahu wants to give. You know, he's going to say all the things, and he's going to talk about the history of the Israeli state with America and all those nice little. But the hard part of his speech is going to be, you can't trust Iran, and the only solution to Iran's nuclear program is a military attack. And you know, Obama knows that he has that in his pocket. The Iranians know that Obama has that in his pocket, and that's why they're negotiating. Not only are they negotiating currently, and a lot of people, maybe you don't realize this, but there's international inspectors at every location within Iran's nuclear program. These centrifuges, you know, what's a centrifuge? You know, it's a thing that spins around, and it concentrates the level of radioactivity within plutonium, or makes plutonium out of uranium.
Separates all those elements.
It separates the elements and concentrates it to a point where you can then have, you can create a nuclear reaction, or you can create a nuclear bomb. And this
or
is,
power.
Or power.
Electricity.
Or power or electricity. But you know, the Iranians could use solar power to create all the electricity they need more affordably than they can nuclear power. That's part of the irony here. You know, they could say we need this, and I don't trust the Iranians. You know, I wouldn't trust the Iranians. Right now they don't have the bomb. They're working to get the bomb. And we have a window here that we can basically say to the Iranians, you don't need the bomb. We can move forward together and create normalization between our two countries. We have a history of the United States of doing that. I know you listen to the right wing. We can never, ever trust the Iranians. We can never, ever normalize with the Iranians. Can you imagine in 1942 saying, you know, someday we will be at peace with Germany? In the middle of World War II, where we just came off of World War I, and now we find ourselves in another war with Germany, could you imagine trying to talk to people then? Who's our strongest allies in the world today? Germany and Japan are listed right at the top of that list. You would never think that. My father's youth, he would have never dreamed of that, but it's been that way since I was a kid.
Well, we learned valuable lessons after the Treaty of Versailles following World War I about the level at which you punish the vanquished. Do you punish them, or do you turn them into your allies and lift them up and help them reconstruct and continue, help them modernize and change their consciousness and their outlook toward their neighbors?
Yeah, what was that plan called after World War II? It was, I'm blanking out here.
The League of Nations?
No, that's World War One.
Oh,
and they,
after World War II.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Versailles.
The Marshall Plan.
The Marshall Plan. We rebuilt Germany, we rebuilt Japan, and we brought them into the modern world. After World War One, we we severely punished Germany and oppressed them, and they ended up having a dynamic Hitler. He was dynamic.
That's the rise of Nazism.
Rise and say, hey, we're Germany. We're not going to put up with this. Well, you know, someday the world will live together in harmony. Will my grandkids see it? I'm hopeful, but would be surprised if they do. But some future generation, in the next 100, 200 years, things will be a lot more peaceful now. And there's a window now with Iran. There was a window with China, and Nixon opened up the door to China, and the Democrats didn't go crazy and do everything they can and do all these political things saying, hey, we can't give any credibility. The Republican Party right now is trying to do everything they can so the future looks back at the Obama administration going, he was a no good, do nothing president, and the fact is he's doing a lot of good and they can't stop it, and they're trying to do everything they can to rewrite history while it's being written. And we're throwing ourselves and our future and the vitality of the middle class under the bus. We're ignoring global warming. We're ignoring opportunities of peace with some of our enemies. And, you know, if we can normalize right now with Iran, and Iran, who do they have influence on? We talked about this at the beginning of the show. Influence on Assad, influence on Hezbollah and Hamas. What is the ripple effect?
Well, we don't know.
Yeah, and the Republicans won't allow it.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by this idea for a ground invasion into southern Lebanon by the Israelis, because...
Let's hold that thought for a second, because we haven't done a commercial break.
Oh, yes.
And I'm not going to play a Legal Shield ad right today's show. I want to just verbalize it because they can do it a lot quicker.
All right.
Here's the bottom line with Legal Shield. You know, for around $1 a day, you can empower your family with a legal plan. It's like an insurance policy. Matter of fact, it's the insurance policy that will make sure all your other insurance companies don't say no to you when they say yes. And that's just a small aspect. If your health insurance, your homeowner's insurance, your life insurance, your car insurance says no, you have Legal Shield. You then call Legal Shield. They'll review the letter of refusal, the denial of claim, and they'll review your policy, and they'll write a letter. Our track record with health insurance is 95% of the letters we write to health insurance companies within 20 days, within 20 days gets a reversal out of those claims. But besides that, you can talk to a provider law firm across the country. Our local provider law firms in Orlando, they're getting $800,000 a month collectively from everyone's membership. You know, I'm paying about $36 a month for my plan. They're getting a bulk of that membership fee. That's a lot of people paying a little bit of money. But to the law firm, it's a lot of money.
That's herd immunity.
Yeah, it's herd immunity. It's all poor resources. And then they've created...
We vaccinate ourselves. From
yeah, and created... And they'll write letters, they'll make phone calls, they'll review documents, they'll give you ongoing advice. They'll write your wills, living wills, medical directives. They'll go to court and fight your traffic tickets, defend you in vehicular homicide cases. All this without deductibles and copays, defend you in lawsuits, IRS audits, 24-hour emergency access to a lawyer. We have a phone app. We have a phone app now. You can download the phone app, either Android or Apple, and it pops up on your phone, and it says, call your law firm, press this button, call your identity theft advisor, that means clean up your credit, make sure your identity is clean, call customer service, call emergency legal access. Officer, deputy, my lawyer would like to talk to you. We answer that phone in 6 seconds. This is just some of the services. And this is for about $1 a day. A dollar a day. Isn't your family worth it? Go to malletagency.com, MalletAgency.com. We're national. And I know, Terry, you have it, and you have a plan. If you know Terry, Terry can sign you up, too.
Yeah, I have a plan. And, yes, if you want to shop for Legal Shield with me, just call 941-465-0087. And I have insurance. My family members have this insurance. It's good to have in the kind of world we live in, and with the kinds of complicated things that take place in our daily lives. So look us up either malletagency.com or call me 941-465-0087. Are we gonna give a plug to Arrow Pest Control?
Yeah. Do you want to do it? Or do you want me to do it?
Oh, you can do it.
Okay, Arrow, and when I bought my house, it was a sand lot.
Mm-hmm.
They had big dogs, the previous owners.
Mm-hmm.
And we had fenced in backyard. There was like not a blade of grass in the front yard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why there was no grass in the front yard. But, you know, it depreciated the value of the house, and I saw that as this is not a big obstacle to overcome. And I planted plugs. I didn't get sod. And now I have a nice lush lawn in the front and backyards of my house. And Arrow has come, and they've put fertilizer down, and they've treated the lawn for fleas, which helps keep my cats. And I had dogs for a while. And you know what happened to my dogs?
What happened to your dogs?
They died of old age. They're 15 and 16, you know?
All right.
So my wire-haired terriers are gone, and I've decided not to get dogs at this point in my life. I like dogs. Maybe I'll get them in the future, but right now I'm not. But, you know, my cats and...
You could get a rescue dog. Maybe someday you'll get another rescue dog.
Yeah, I got a lot going on in my life right now, so...
Yeah. I know. Dogs are hard to take care of.
Cats, they have their own door. They go in and out of the house.
They're a little more self-maintaining.
And I don't even maintain the kitty litter because the lawn does that, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not a dog person. I wish I were because there's so many dogs that need to be rescued, but my life is just not such that I can rescue help a dog. But I sure do love kitties. I've got my rescue cats.
How many cats do you have?
I have three right now. I did have four. One passed away last year.
Yeah, I had four, and I had six. I think two people liked a couple of my cats and took them home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people walk by my house, and
I've got one cat that really ought to be two cats. He weighs 18 pounds.
Yeah.
He overeats. It's so awful. I've had to put him on a diet. He's compulsive about eating. I've never had a cat like this before.
Yeah. I had a cat. You know, about 6 years ago, I like to ride my bike, as you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was coming around the corner, and there was a woman. She just came off of 10th Avenue where I live on the 51st Street, and she's carrying one of my cats. And I'm riding my bike down the street, and she's like a block away from the street I live on, holding one of my cats. And the cat was not all that happy, but she held that cat. And I went up to her and I started talking to her because I saw that my cat. And I said, oh, so you're taking your cat out for a walk? And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was your cat?
It was my cat in her arms. And I said, oh, how long have you had that cat? And she made up some story. And
did you let her keep the cat?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. And I said, you know, that cat's not your cat. And she goes, well, what do you mean? I go, because it's my cat. And she just had this look in her face.
Oh, wow.
And I think you ought to give me back my cat. And I think it's very improper of you. And if you can't afford a cat, I said, I'll go down to the shelter with you, and I'll pay the $70 fee and get you a cat. But you can start with your own relationship with a cat. But I have a relationship with my cats. And don't take my cats.
The county has Meowtown right downtown.
Yeah.
You know, they've reopened that facility downtown. And you can adopt cats at Meowtown downtown.
So I've had a few cats disappear, and I always picture that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that, you know, one of the shelters went a couple months ago, and I went looking for one of my missing cats. started talking about coyotes, and I go, oh, don't tell me that.
Yeah, always go to the shelter to look for your animal. Don't call there and think they're going to give you an honest answer. Always go down there physically, you know, on your lunch hour, or just take a couple of hours off from work if you have a lost pet.
Yeah.
Don't call and expect an honest answer.
Yeah, because Bishop and the Humane Society, they may have all the right intentions, and you may just describe your cat a little differently than their picture in their head.
Well, in the animal shelter. I mean, there are a lot of things that can go wrong.
And if you go down to the animal shelter, they may not keep your cat more than a day or two before it gets euthanized. That's not Bishop or the Humane Society.
Right.
But it's, do not ever, if you have an animal, that maybe you have to give it up for whatever reason, or you found a stray, and you, maybe you did what you could to find the home,
yeah.
Do not go to the animal shelter in Manatee County.
Yeah.
Go to Bishop or the Humane Society with that animal. Am I right, Terry?
Yeah, or, you know, I would even skip that. I would just find a rescue group, an animal rescue group in the area. Like Forget Me Not Rescue, the Cat Depot. I mean, you know, just skip all that altogether, and, you know, just do a keyword search on animal rescue groups in Manatee County. There's a whole plethora of them.
Well, I would say Bishop is like a well-funded animal rescue.
Yeah,
group.
But they euthanize. So if you're worried about an animal getting killed, you know.
Well, they don't euthanize animals unless they're like in distress or. Well, I've been to Bishop a number of times. They don't euthanize animals that have been there too long.
Yeah, well, I would still go to a rescue group. I would look up a rescue group. There are a number of them.
And if you want a cat, don't go by my house.
Yeah.
They're nice.
Yeah, don't steal Mitch's cats.
Yeah, they're my
cats.
But anyway, Arrow, what they do is they do home fertilization. I usually read their website, which is arrowservices.com, and I interject the word arrow where it says we, but they'll do home fertilization. They're really good. They're reliable. Their people are really nice. And if you want irrigation systems in your property, they'll do irrigation. And if you have termites or other pests, they'll get rid of them as well. And so give them a call. They're great people. They're regional. They're like from Tampa all the way down to Fort Myers. And it's an interesting story. And you know what? We can go 2 hours today.
Oh, I can. I've got another appointment to go to.
Well,
you'll have to go 2 hours without me, Mitch.
Their phone number is 941-981-4331.
Arrow Pest Control.
You can go to arrowservices.com. And 1490 is off the air this morning, so if you're listening to this on the archive and go, how come you didn't do a show? And something happened with Verizon, and their technicians are working on it.
Mysteries. Anyway, well, this is Terry Wonder checking out. Mitch,
do you have to leave right now?
Yeah,
do
I
have to do a wrap up?
No, well, I've got to wrap up. I've got to get going. I've got an appointment to go to, so. Anyway.
But we started to get something that
mm-hmm.
I wanted just to put the ad in there. And
what ad?
Well, Legal Shield.
Oh,
Arrow.
And for Arrow. Yeah, well, we got that covered. So thank you, Legal Shield. Thank you, Arrow. And it's been a very nice broadcast today. And
if you'd like to be a sponsor of the show, we'd welcome that.
Yeah, if you want to sponsor the show, call in.
Give me a call.
347-989-0132.
Well, you can do that right now, but other hours, just call me directly at 813-924-7994. And you got a bolt, huh? Okay. Well, Terry's out of here. And I'm just going to stay on for just a little bit longer. And if you do would like to call the show, time to get off? All right. Our call-in number, and we're going to end the show in about a minute or so here. Our call-in number is 347-989-0132. That's the call-in number. We'd love to hear from you. And the one thing I want to ask, you can find us at itchyourgavel.com. You click on the link. It takes us to the Blog Talk Radio, where we broadcast on. blogtalkradio at itch.com/itsyourgavel, or you can go to itsyourgavel.com and click on the link. It'll take you there. You can listen to us stream. We broadcast on 1490 AM Tampa Bay. It's 1490 AM Tampa Bay, WWPR. So, if you go to our Blog Talk Radio, you'll find where you're listening. You can be a follower of our show. And one of the advantages of following our show is Terry and I, we've done one so far, because we regularly do the show from 9 to 10 on 1490. And the rest of the time, if there's an event going on somewhere nearby in the Bradenton, Sarasota, Southern Tampa Bay, the Suncoast area, give us a call, and Terry and I, or one or both of us, can show up and broadcast at any time, and we can create a two-hour show around you. And sometimes these shows, the one show we did, we had about 4 hours' notice. And if you click the follow button, we send out a thing saying, hey, we're doing our show. Come listen. Well, with that all said, it's time for me to say have a great Thursday. And I am out of here. And we'll see you on Tuesday.